no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show, your weekly hour of radio drama, brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from the Screen Guild Theater. We'll hear Shadow of a Doubt, their episode from June 21st, 1948. After that, it's Rocky Fortune and A Sitting Duck for Death, his story from February 23rd, 1954.
From Hollywood, Camel Cigarettes presents The Screen Guild Player. Our stars, Joseph Cotton and Vanessa Brown. Our play, Shadow of a Doubt. Our host, Camel Cigarettes.
Experience is the best teacher.
Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. Try a Camel in your T-zone. T for taste and T for throat, where you judge any cigarette. See how your taste welcomes Camel's rich, full flavor. See what your throat reports on Camel's cool, cool mildness. Tonight, Camel Cigarettes present the Screen Guild Players in Alfred Hitchcock's famous screen hit, Shadow of a Doubt, a nerve-tingling story filled with suspense. It stars Joseph Cotton in one of his greatest roles as Uncle Charlie, with Vanessa Brown as his lovely young niece. The Camel Screen Guild Players in Shadow of a Doubt.
Widow Waltz. I guess you all know the Merry Widow Waltz. But have you ever heard it played in church? It's strange, isn't it? But then everything about this story is so strange. Right from the beginning. I suppose the beginning was that day at home. You see, we live in Santa Rosa, a little town in Upper California. Very little town, where nothing ever seems to happen. And well, I guess that afternoon it had me down a bit.
Now, Charlie, that's no way to talk.
What's the matter, Charlie? Don't you feel well?
I'm perfectly well, Mother, but I've just been thinking, that's all. I've come to the conclusion that I give up. I simply give up.
Give up what?
Dad, have you ever stopped to think that this family's just gone to pieces?
We have?
Of course we have. We just sort of go along, but we don't get anywhere.
Oh, I don't know, Charlie. The bank gave your father a raise last March.
The second raise in 5 years.
Money. How can you talk about money when I'm talking about souls?
What we need is someone to take us out of this rut. Have you any suggestions?
Well, I was thinking that... Mother, I'm going to wire Uncle Charlie.
Oh, darling, you're not going to ask for money.
Well, of course not. Money wouldn't help. I'm going to invite him for a visit.
Now, Charlie, you can't ask a busy man like that to come all the way from the East, even if you can reach him. You know he moves around so much.
I'll reach him, all right, and he'll come for me. I'm named after him, and we're the only relatives he has. And besides, you know what?
What do you?
I can't explain it exactly. It's just a feeling. I mean, well, I think he wants to come.
Hello? Postal Union? Will you take a telegram, please, to... Mrs. Joseph Newton, Santa Rosa, California. Here's the message. Surprise. Coming out to visit. Stop. Arrive Thursday and try and stop me. Love to all. And a kiss from Charlie, from her Uncle Charlie. Right. That's right. That's the signature. Uncle Charlie. How much? Yes, I've got the exact change right here.
That was the message they handed me when I went into the telegraph office to send my wire to him. It was almost as though he'd heard me calling 2,000 miles away. And then almost before we knew it, he'd arrived. Tall and slim and such a boyish smile. No wonder Mother was so crazy about her brother, even seeing him so seldom. At dinner that night, he was completely charming. And generous, too, with all the lovely presents he brought.
Little something for you, Joe. I hope you like it.
Well, say, I never had a wristwatch, Charles.
Well, you've got one now. Here, Emmy. This is for you.
Oh, perfume. Oh, Charles, how nice. And Taboo is my favorite.
Mother, it's just wonderful.
And I expect to be paid for it, too.
Huh? Paid for it?
Oh, Joe, he means that banana cream pie.
Oh.
I'll go and bring it in.
Well, wait, Emmy, wait. I'll give you a hand.
Gave them quite a start, didn't I?
No, Uncle Charles. You've made us all very happy.
Not yet, not all of you. Here's your present, Charles.
Oh, I didn't mean that. I don't want a present. Please don't give me anything.
Nothing? Why not?
Well, I can't explain it, but it would spoil things if you gave me anything.
You're a strange girl, Charlie. Why would it spoil things?
Because we're not just an uncle and a niece. It's something else. I know things about you.
You do?
Yes, I know that you don't tell people a lot of things. I don't either. And I have a feeling that inside of you somewhere there's something nobody knows about.
Something nobody knows?
Something secret and wonderful. I'll find it out.
It isn't good to find out too much, Charlie. Now, open your hand. There you are.
Thank you.
You haven't even looked at it.
I don't have to look. No matter what you gave me, it'd be the same.
Yeah, let me show you. It's a ring. An emerald ring. A real one.
Oh, it's beautiful. And you have something engraved on it. That's different.
I haven't, but I will if you like.
Well, yes, you have, Uncle Charlie. It's very faint. See it on the inside? T.S. from B.M. Why, it's someone's initial.
Can you imagine? That jeweler rooked me. He told me it was new. I'll take it back, Charlie. Give it to me.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter. I like it this way.
Charlie, you don't want to go around with
a... Here it is, Charles. Here it is. Your favorite dessert, if I remember.
You see, Uncle Charlie? I was meant to keep it.
Yes, I suppose you were.
You see, now it's something special between you and me. I'll never give it away to anyone.
Charles, why don't you go inside and rest?
I need a little exercise, Emmy. Work off that meal.
Oh, you're not used to helping with the dishes.
Nonsense. Where do I put these dry glasses?
Just set them on the cupboard. We'll be done in a jiffy. Charlie, be careful. Oh, that's a good set, you know. Maybe you better not sing.
I can't get that tune out of my head. Maybe somebody told me what it is.
The waltz.
Yes, yes, but which one?
Oh, your father would know. Too bad he had to go to that meeting.
The funniest thing. Sometimes I get a tune in my head like that, and pretty soon I hear somebody else humming it, too. I think tunes jump from head to head. Uncle Charlie, do you know what it is?
Why, Oh, no, I don't.
I know it's a waltz, and it's... It's Victor Herbert.
Yes, Blue Danube Waltz.
No, wait. I know. It's the Merry Widow.
I'm sorry. One of the good ones, too.
Oh, nonsense, Charles. We have plenty of glass.
Mother, should we chase him out before he smashes the rest?
That's a good idea. Charles, you march right into the parlor and sit yourself down.
All alone? But that'll be fun.
No, it won't. I mean, not if you read our evening paper. It's awful.
Come in.
I brought you some water, Uncle Charlie.
Oh.
In case you get thirsty during the night.
Thank you, Charlie. It's very thoughtful. Well, I see you've got the evening paper, too. Make read in bed?
No, I'm going to leave it in Dad's room. He'll want to look through it when he gets home.
Hardly worth it, I'd say. Well, pleasant dreams.
Uncle Charlie.
Hmm?
Uncle Charlie, I know a secret about you you don't think I know.
What secret?
Remember I said you couldn't hide anything from me because I'd find it out?
Oh.
Well, I know there was something in the evening paper about you.
About me? In the evening
mm-hmm,
paper?
Mm-hmm. You read the paper and page 3 is gone. It was something about you, wasn't it? And you didn't want us to see it. But now that I know, you might as well tell me.
I guess you've got me, Charlie. Only it wasn't about me. It was someone I used to know.
Well, why don't you tell me? You've got that page right there in your pocket. I can see it sticking out. I think I'll just take it.
And... You stay out of my pocket. Oh, it's none of your business.
Uncle Charlie, you're hurting my wrist.
Oh, Charlie, I didn't mean to hurt you. I was just fooling. That story wasn't anything. Just some gossip. Not very pretty either. Not for you to read. Forget it, will you?
Of course, if you say so.
That's a girl. Good night, young Charlie. Pleasant dreams.
I guess I did forget about that paper. Anyway, for a while. You see, the very next day, those survey men phoned, and they said we'd been picked as a typical family, and could they ask questions and take pictures and everything. Well, you can imagine we were pretty excited. All except Uncle Charlie. He seemed more annoyed, and he went to his room, and he shut the door, and he wouldn't come out. And then when the survey man came over, I had to answer all the questions. You see, Mother was straightening up the kitchen for the pictures, so I showed them both around the house. The upstairs, too.
Mighty pleasant little home, Miss Newton.
I've been hoping we could do it over, Mr. Graham.
That's typical, too. Whose room is that?
Well, that's mine. But my uncle is using it now.
Miss Newton, could I get a picture? You know, typical girl, typical room.
Well, my uncle's resting, Mr. Saunders. I really don't want to disturb him.
Oh, naturally. Say, is there a back stairs?
Oh, yes, right down the hall.
Then I'll bet you 50 cents your uncle is out.
You're just trying to get Mr. Saunders in there to take a picture. Isn't he, Mr. Saunders?
That's right.
Besides, I know my uncle's in there.
I'm still betting he isn't. Want to take me up?
All right. Uncle Charlie? Uncle Charlie, may I come in?
You see?
Why, you were right. He's gone. Funny you should do a thing like that.
Maybe you don't know him as well as you think you do.
Well, of course I do. I know him very well. Are you trying to tell me I shouldn't think he's so wonderful?
Well, not exactly.
Someone's coming up the back porch, Jack.
Huh? I always say the more the merrier. Miss Newton, is your uncle?
Well, yes, it is. Uncle Charlie?
Guess I get a picture of the hall. Right?
What are you trying to do with that flashlight? Blind me?
Uncle Charlie, he was taking pictures in my room.
I'm not in your room, and I don't like to be photographed. I'm afraid I'll have to ask you for the film, sir. I must insist. Give it to me, please.
Okay, Fred. Give him the film.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, that's better, I guess. Let's go.
He was so strange. I don't understand.
I think I could help you out on that.
You could?
Sure. Suppose you have dinner with me tonight, then we can sit in the park and have a nice, long talk. Fair to keep pretending, and so I thought I'd better tell you. This job of mine isn't always easy, Charlie.
Then you're really a detective.
Charlie, listen.
You're not on a survey at all. You lied to us. You just wanted to get into our house.
Listen, Charlie, you've got to trust me.
Then you've done nothing but lie. Well, you probably didn't even want to take me out tonight.
But I did. Honestly, I did. You don't know what it's meant to me to take you out, talk with you, get to know you.
Just part of your job.
Don't be silly. When I came to this town to find a man, I hadn't counted on you. I hadn't counted on your mother or your family.
Find a man? What man?
We're not even sure if he's the right one. We won't know till they check that picture we wired east. The one we took of your uncle.
But what, did you give that one back?
No. We just gave him an empty roll of film.
Another trick.
Now, Charlie, please.
My uncle hasn't done anything. He knows it would kill my mother if he did. Why don't you go away and leave me alone?
Because you're a nice girl, Charlie. Because no matter what, you're going to help me do my job. Charlie, now think. How much do you know about your uncle?
I know all I want to know. He's good and kind and generous. He came here and made us all so happy. He hasn't done anything to...
To what? To what, Charlie?
Nothing. You wouldn't understand. It's something I've got to figure out for myself.
Mr. Charlie, reading the newspaper in a public library. Don't you get it at home?
Oh, yes, Miss Conklin, but there was something a couple of days ago. I wanted to copy it, and I threw it away. A recipe. Oh,
well, I hope you find it. And will you please put the paper back when you're due?
I found it, all right. It can't be anything really awful. Oh, not enough. Murder assault. Police are conducting a coast-to-coast search for the man who strangled Thelma Shenley. Former musical comedy star. Wanted for the death of two other white widows. Fugitives with no name. Just a merry widow murderer.
Vanessa Brown and Joseph Cotton will return to the Camel Screen Guild microphone in Act Two of Shadow of a Doubt. Most of us know pretty well what we want in motion pictures and radio plays. We like action, romance, and interesting and unusual characters. When those ingredients are properly blended, it produces a play that's a box office hit. In cigarettes, we know what we like, too. Most folks want all the rich, full flavor and cool, mildness they can get. And that's why millions and millions of people smoke Camels. They learn through the experience of trying different brands of cigarettes that Camels give them the most in smoking enjoyment. Yes, millions smoke Camels because Camels' rich, full flavor and cool mildness give them just what they want in a cigarette.
More people are smoking Camels than ever before.
Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. And remember, Camels by the carton are the best buy. Camels by the carton save you money, help to keep you from running out. Camel Cigarettes now present Act Two of Shadow of a Doubt, starring Joseph Cotton and Vanessa Brown.
I don't know how long I sat there in the library staring at the paper and not seeing a thing. But suddenly I realized that I was chilled. As though someone had drawn a blind across the sun. I tried to tell myself it wasn't true. But there was the ring. The ring he'd given me. The emerald with the faint initials on the band. Her initials. Thelma Shelley. The woman my Uncle Charles had killed. I woke for hours that afternoon trying to decide what I should do. And after dinner, I walked some more. I was just at the park when I heard him call.
Well, Charlie.
I hurried on, but he overtook me. I remember I was very frightened.
Hurry, Charlie. Slow down, will you? I want to talk to you. Come on, let's sit on this bed.
No.
I said sit down.
You're hurting my wrist again.
Oh, I'm sorry, Charlie. I guess I got excited. Can't blame me, really. Not when I see something coming between us two. Tell me, was it something those survey men told you, that fellow Graham?
He's got nothing to do with it. I hope he never knows anything about
Charlie,
you.
Charlie, there's no way to talk. After all, I've been around a bit. I've been chasing around the globe since I was 16. I've done some pretty foolish things, too. Made some pretty foolish mistakes. Nothing serious. Just foolish. I mean, like... What's the matter? What are you staring at?
Your hands.
Oh, Charlie, now don't start imagining...
How could you do a thing like that? You're my uncle. My mother's brother. We thought you were the most wonderful man in the world.
What do you know?
I know I said I'd never give this ring up, but I can't wear it now. Not with her initials in it here. Take it.
You think you know something, don't you? You think you're the clever little girl who knows something. What do you know about women like that? Have you ever seen them like I have? Every day in the best hotels, every day by the thousands, drinking their money, eating their money, losing their money at bridge, playing all day and night, smelling of money and proud of it. Horrible. Faded, fat, greedy women.
But they're alive. They're human beings.
Are they, Charlie? Are they human or are they fat, wheezing animals? What happens to animals when they get too fat and too old? What happens...
Stop it, please!
See, you don't understand. All I want is a little help.
From me?
Oh. I'm so tired, Charlie. There's an end to the running a man can do, and this is my last chance. You've got to help me. I count on you, Charlie. You said yourself there was something special between us, and think of your mother. Kill your mother. Charlie, give me this last chance.
All right. All right, if you go away.
Where to, Charlie? Where should I go? Where do you want me to go?
I don't care anywhere, just so you go away from here.
I just haven't got a thing in the house for lunch, and I couldn't go to the market myself, not with a cake in the oven. Charlie, I've never known you to stay in bed so late.
I'm sorry, Mother. I didn't sleep very well.
Your Uncle Charlie's been asking for you. He's on the front porch. Here's a list for the grocery, dear.
I'll run along, then.
Back stairs again? Charlie, why do you always go that way? Those stairs are so steep. And don't you want to tell your uncle good morning?
I'll see him when I get back. It's shorter this way.
Well, watch yourself, dear.
No, don't worry. I know these steps.
Mother! Charlie! What happened?
I tripped. I think the step was loose.
Oh, good heavens, Charlie. You might have been killed.
Yes, I might have. But I wasn't.
Yes? Oh, good evening. Come in, Charlie.
I wanted you to know I almost had an accident this morning.
Yes, your mother told me. I was very worried.
When are you leaving, Uncle Charlie?
Leaving? My dear girl, do you know what I did today? I went down and put a little money in the bank where your father works. $40,000 in cash. Of course, there isn't quite $40,000 left there now. I gave $1,000 to the children's hospital and another $1,000 to the community chest. Made your father quite important.
When are you leaving?
You know, I've been thinking, Charlie, I want to settle down, live in a place where people know me, have some money in the bank, some sort of business. Be a part of this family.
I see.
The sensible thing is to be friends with me. I can do a lot for you, Charlie. I can do a lot for all of you.
Not you. We don't want anything from you. If you don't leave, I'll tell what I know.
Oh, don't be silly, Charlie. Who'd believe you? A wall's running through your head. You don't like the initials on the ring, and you connect it all up with a newspaper clipping, and now you haven't even got the ring.
You haven't.
I? Ridiculous. I gave it to you. You see.
Uncle Charlie, I don't want you here. I don't want you to touch my mother, so go away. I'm warning you. Go away, or I'll kill you myself. Do you know what it means to live in terror? I did. I knew he wouldn't stop at anything. At any moment, there might be another accident, and he'd be very sorry. And I'd be dead. My only weapon was the ring. If I could find the ring, I thought I'd frighten Uncle Charlie into leaving town. It was the next night that I got my chance. Mother had invited all our leading citizens to meet her brother. And while they were downstairs drinking Uncle Charlie's champagne, I was upstairs going through his things. It was rather late when I came down.
Can't I persuade you, Reverend Phillips, just that?
No, thanks.
You know what the psalmist said, wine maketh glad the heart of man.
Your gift to the church has given us cause enough to rejoice. And besides, I'm afraid my parishioners aren't overly familiar with the psalm.
Well, I always... Oh, there you are, Charlie. What kept you so long?
I was looking for my ring, Uncle Charlie. Silly me. I thought I'd lost it.
Oh, what an exquisite ring.
It's an emerald, Mrs. Potter. A real emerald. Uncle Charlie gave it to me for a going-away present.
What's that? Going away?
Why, Charles!
Isn't that what you said, Uncle Charlie? Didn't you tell me you were going away?
Yes. Yes, I did.
But, Charles, I didn't read.
I'm sorry, Emmy. I didn't expect it to happen so soon, but I got an important message, you see. A very important message. I'm afraid I'll have to leave in the morning.
I wish you didn't have to go.
That's the way it is, Emmy. You can't always do the things you like.
Well, they're going to start. We better get off, Emmy. Charlie?
Well, goodbye, Charles. You're right, won't you?
Of course. Watch yourself on those steps.
Goodbye, Charles.
Bye. Oh, Charlie, you wait a minute. I want to talk to you.
He'll be starting in a moment.
We can stand right here on the platform. I want you to know that I think you were right to make me leave. Best for your mother and best for all of us.
Oh, we're moving.
No, she's not very strong, you know. I don't think she could stand the shock. I remember once when she was a little girl.
But the train's moving. I've got to get off.
Be still.
Let go! You're hurting my wrist. Your hand! Let me go!
Sorry, but I've got
to,
Charlie. Did you know too much? No, not yet, Charlie. Not till we're going a little faster. Not till we meet the train that's coming down the other track. No mistakes this time. Each little detail in its place. I've checked it all, you see. There it is now. It's coming fast, Charlie. Almost time to say goodbye. Almost time to...
They're having the funeral now. The biggest funeral Santa Rosa's ever seen. They were all so shocked when I told them how it happened. How Uncle Charles slipped and fell beneath the train. They're playing the Merry Widow Waltz. I told them that's what Uncle Charlie would have wanted. I don't think I'll ever forget him. And they won't either. They'll always remember the time they heard the Merry Widow Waltz in church.
Joseph Cotton and Vanessa Brown will return to the Camel Screen Guild microphone in just a moment. When you're bowling, you like to try the bowling balls in your hand, get the weight and feel of the different ones till you find one that suits you best. When you're choosing a cigarette, you try it in your T-zone. That's T for taste and T for throat. Try a Camel in your T-zone and see if your taste doesn't say, that rich, full flavor, that's for me. See if your throat doesn't welcome Camel's cool, cool mildness. Millions of people find the greatest smoking enjoyment in Camel's choice tobaccos, properly aged and expertly blended. Among them are many doctors.
More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette, according to a nationwide survey.
Three leading independent research organizations asked 113,597 doctors what cigarette they smoked. The brand named most was Camel. Now that our nerves have stopped jitterbugging, we bring our stars back for a final round of thanks. Joe and Vanessa, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that was one of the most exciting half hours we've ever had.
Well, Mike, when you get right down to it, these appearances with the Screen Guild players are pretty exciting for us, too. For after all, this is our show. It belongs to the motion picture industry. It's deeply satisfying to know that all the profits go to the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its wonderful country house and hospital. Vanessa, don't you feel that way about it?
Exactly, Joe, and more. Because the good work goes way beyond Hollywood. Each week, the makers of Camel cigarettes send freak smokes to men in servicemen's hospitals all over the country. This week, among other hospitals, free Camels are being sent to the United States AAF Station Hospital in Fort Warren, Wyoming, the U.S. Marine Hospital, Detroit, Michigan, the Veterans Hospital in Los Angeles, California. Happy smoking, fellas. Your free Camels are on their way to you
now. You've made a lot of those boys happy now. How about doing the same thing for our audience?
You mean next week's Screen Guild show? Oh, it's really terrific. It's a smash Broadway hit finally brought to the screen. Beautiful music, charming romance, drama, comedy. Got everything.
Has it got a title?
Oh, of course, of course. It's a brand new picture. Up in Central Park. And it stars Deanna Durbin, Dick Hames, and Vincent Price. Enough?
Yes, ma'am. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Shadow of a Doubt was directed by Bill Lawrence, adapted for radio by Harry Cronman, with music by Wilbur Hatch, and was presented through the courtesy of Universal International, now releasing Walter Wanger's Tap Root.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Did you ever wonder what a bull must feel like when they let him into the ring? The bars go up, he's free, he rushes out figuring, I've gotten away. And there in front of him are 50 guys with pitchforks and a man with an oversized knitting needle. He looks around and there's no way out. Last week I found out what that feeling is like. It all began one evening when I hit my flat for a change of drapery. Yeah?
Rocky?
Yeah.
This is Midge, Midge Moore.
Yeah, what's up, Midge?
Listen, Rocky, I just got a phone call from Carl, the organ grinder.
The grind? You're crazy. He's in the tank at Dannemora for 900 years.
I'm telling you, just called me. Must have busted out.
Midge, it's a gag. Somebody's trying to give you the memes.
It was the grinder. I know his voice.
Okay, it was the grinder. What did he say?
He says he's got a list with three names on it. The three guys what sent him up.
Meaning?
First me, Midge Moore, second you, Rocky Fortune, and then Harry Bowman. He means it, Rocky. He's going to get us.
Look, Midge, stay where you are. Lock the door. I'm going to check a friend of mine at headquarters and see if the grinder busted out, okay?
Make it fast, huh, Rocky? My blood pressure ain't so good, and if the grinder gets here, I ain't going to have any blood pressure.
I hang up and follow my nose over to the Irish clubhouse for a talk with my pal Hamilton Finger of Homicide. I find his homely face behind a pair of size 14 brogans on the squad room desk. Hey, Sarge. It's me, Sergeant. Rocky, snap out of it.
Oh, hiya, Rock.
Catching a few winks, huh?
Oh, I was just meditating. What brings you?
I just had a call from Midge Moore.
So? Who's Midge Moore?
You remember about 5 years ago, there was an ex-wrestler named Carl the Grinder?
Sure. You had something to do with sending him up, didn't you?
Yeah, Midge Moore and me was coming home from a bar one night when we see this ape beating up an old peddler trying to rob him. We yelled for the cops and then we testified against him at the trial.
Wasn't that a fourth offense?
Yeah, he went up for the rest of his natural. Only before he went, he swore he was going to kill three guys. Midge Moore, me, and Harry Bowman.
Yeah, that's right. Bowman was the assistant DA who sent him up. He went rotten, didn't he?
Like a deadlock's in a steam bath. He's in charge of political corruption of the Fourth Ward.
So what about this call from Midge Moore?
He says the grinder called him.
You don't say. Where from?
Not from the State University.
Oh, that's a big help.
You're playing coy, Sarge.
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. The grinder busted out this morning. We just got an APB on it a couple of minutes ago.
Holy Moses.
You don't look so good, Rock.
Yeah, you should see me in my other suit. The one they're going to bury me in after Carl the Grinder gets through with me. I dive out of the precinct and into a subway station, and 5 minutes later, I'm pounding up the stairway to Midge Moore's flat, which is in a neighborhood even crummy in mine, if that's possible. Yeah, it's possible. Midge. It's me, Rocky. Let me in. Midge. Let me in. It's funny, the door's not locked. Midge? Midge, where are you? Uh-oh. Don't bother to answer, man. Midge Moore is lying on his face with his neck broken the way somebody breaks a match and throws it away. There's only one guy I know strong enough to do this to a man. Carl the Grinder. Sergeant Finger, please. Sarge Rocky. Look, I'm up at Midge Moore's. Yeah. He's laying here like an unmade bed. You better come up. Now, I'd like to stay, Sarge, but unfortunately my name is next on the list. I'm going to take a short vacation and out of Mongolia or someplace until you guys put the clamp on the grinder. So long.
Rocky. Rocky, wait.
Huh? Oh, hi, Mary. Oh,
Rocky, I'm glad I found you. I was just coming to warn Midge. My husband's on the loose. He's going to kill you.
You're a couple of minutes too late. Midge was visited.
He's dead?
Dead enough to convince the average coroner.
Oh, Rocky, you've got to get out of town.
You're telling me.
Carl says that...
Wait a minute. Did he call you?
He came to the place.
He came to...
Yeah, he just walked in. He looked awful. He made me give him one of my brother's suits. Said he had some business to take care of. He'd be back for me later. He said if I let out a peep about him, he'd kill me.
Oh, he don't joke about these things, honey. Maybe you better take it on a fly by yourself.
I wouldn't know where to go. I thought maybe I could talk to him, reason with him. Rocky, he's out of his mind. He's crazy to kill.
You're a brave girl to stand up to him, baby, but it ain't going to get you anyplace. Remember the last time he decided to use you as a punching bag?
I remember, Rocky, but he's still my husband.
Baby, he's a fourth offender, and he's psycho besides. Now get smart and get to the cops.
I guess you're right.
You bet I am. Beat it now.
Oh, where are you going?
Right now, back to my flat, pick up a suitcase and a couple of bucks. After that, I'm going to find a big rock and crawl under it till Loverboy gets caught.
What about Harry Bowman? Carl says he'll get him, too.
The way that Ward heel has been trying to make this neighborhood hit the jackpot, I wouldn't mind too much. Look, the cops know Carl's after Bowman, and you can be sure Mr. Bowman has his muscle boys doing 4-hour shifts. Come on, baby, we gotta make time. Do like I said.
Bye, Rocky.
I'll see you around.
Be careful.
Don't worry. I zigzag up to my place in the Fourth Ward, which is Harry Bowman's private political kingdom, and scout the joint to make sure Carl the Grinder hasn't beaten me to it. I slip up the fire escape and into the hall. I make quick like a bunny over to my door, turn the key, and ease it open. Something tells me something is phony. But what happens next is so crazy, I check my cigarettes to make sure they didn't send me the kind with the built-in dreams. What the? There in my flat is a 6-piece brass band with a big banner that reads, "Yay, Rocky." The Fourth Ward Political Club salutes you. In front, about 25 freeloaders with party hats and noisemakers are climbing the walls. I'm beginning to think I've stumbled into my own nightmare, so I do a quick about-face and dodge out into the hall. I get 2 steps when a gorilla in a bowler hat mousetraps me.
Hold it, Rocky.
Hey, let go of the arm. You'll bend the biceps.
Where do you think you're going?
Away. Maybe for good.
You ain't doing nothing of the kind. You ain't hospitable.
Listen, will you do me a favor?
Anything, Pally.
Tell me what this thing's all about.
Why, sure, Pally. It's a celebration, see, in honor of you.
What did I do?
You've been selected by Councilman Harry Bowman, President and Vice President of Fort Ward Political Association.
For what?
How should I know? You've just been selected, that's all.
Now, look, Herman.
Call me Moose. That's short for Morris.
Okay, Moose. I want to know just what this
thing...
Here
comes the boss. Maybe you better ask him.
Well, Rocky, Rocky, old pal.
He was trying to take it on the lam, boss.
What? Run out on a celebration in his own honor?
Bowman, what is this? What are these clowns doing to my flat?
Why, haven't you heard, Rocky? The Fourth Ward Political Association decided to honor Mr. Average Worker, the man who represents those hard-working, self-sacrificing individuals who made my election to office possible by their unstinting sacrifice.
Me?
I selected you myself.
Look, Bowman, I didn't even vote for you. Now, what's the gimmick?
Listen to him, Moose. He's so modest, he doesn't even want to admit how hard he's worked for my election.
Touching, ain't it?
Yeah, that's the spirit we've decided to salute, Rocky. Yes, sir. But let's go in and join the happy throng.
I don't want to join no happy throng, Rocky.
Rocky, this is only the beginning. Why, we've planned a gala celebration in your honor. A parade in an open motor car through the streets of the Fourth Ward with banners saluting your name, a testimonial dinner at the firehouse, and finally, in recognition of your hard work, a miniature gold-plated ballot box.
Stuffed with votes for Bowman. Listen, Harry, I appreciate your publicity gag, but you'll have to find another schnook. This boy's leaving town, and if you ain't heard, I'd advise you to do the same thing.
Why?
Carl the Grinder busted out of Dannemora. He's got a list with 3 names, Midge, me, and you, in that order. And if you don't think he means business, try looking Midge Moore in the face. You'll have to stand behind him, because that's the way his head faces now. So call up the celebration and let me get my suitcase.
Just a minute.
Yeah.
You ain't going anyplace, my friend.
I just told you.
You don't have to tell me. I got a phone call from the Grinder this morning.
Then what's all this jazz about? Let's get under a rock.
Me, maybe, but not you.
Listen, you moron. This bum's loaded for bear. He don't... Hey. I think I'm beginning to get the picture.
Yeah, smart boy.
I've been duck hunting.
Good. And you know it takes a decoy to catch a live duck. Carl the Grinder is the live duck,
and I'm the decoy.
He's clever.
Only one thing.
Yeah?
To hunt ducks, you use a wooden decoy.
Oh, we're out of wood, so we're using you.
What happens if I get killed?
Tough.
What happens if I don't?
I figure it this way, Rocco, man. You're next on the list. Just want to make sure the Grinder finds you, so I'm giving you a little publicity. If he shows and kills you, my boys take care of him. In the meantime, I'm leaving town for a short spell. Take care of him, Moose. See that he enjoys the party. So long, Mallard.
Bowman slips downstairs and Moose eases me into my flat with a .40 caliber cannon in my backbone. The party is going to be a beaut, I can see.
All right, shut up. Quiet down, quiet down. All right. Now, hear this, you freeloaders. We're going downstairs for a motorcade over to the firehouse where we get free eats and beer. Courtesy of Councilman Harry H. Bowman, who can't be here on account of urgent business. A pile on downstairs and into the sanitation trucks, which Mr. Bowman has placed for your disposal. Okay, let's go.
That's no fortune.
Must we?
We must.
Look, Moose, I'll never get a block sitting in an open car like a clay pigeon. Be reasonable.
Okay, I'll be reasonable. I'll give you 3 seconds, or else...
Else nothing. I'm gone.
Be my guest.
We pound down the stairs, and just as we hit the sidewalk, a couple of reporters and photographers gang up on us. At any other time, this would be flattering, but right now it's murder.
Hold it, Mr. Fortune. I'd like a picture for my paper.
Sure, pal. What paper?
Son!
Go ahead. Shoot any time you're ready.
I'll do that.
No sooner is the word shoot out of my mouth than I feel those icy fingers clamped in my heart. The photographer sticks his head under a black cloth and points the camera at me as I remember 2 very important items. 1, news photographers don't work under a hood. 2, the son went out of business a year ago.
Hold it.
Moose.
Smile.
Hit the dirt, Moose. It's the grinder. Grab him.
Look out, he's getting away.
Watch it there.
No luck. You got away in the crowd.
That's too bad.
He missed you with that Tommy gun, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have better luck next time. Okay, hop into the roadster for the motorcade.
Hey, who's the guy with the beard behind the wheel?
Him? That's Ivan, the boss's new chauffeur.
Looks like a fugitive from a shredded wheat plant.
Don't insult him. He's very temperamental. Hop in.
You all ready?
Let's go, Ivan.
Hold on.
Hey, do I have to stand up? My legs are tired.
Stand up. We want the grinder to be able to find you.
What happens if I make it to the firehouse?
You get a free dinner. Testimonial.
What happens if I don't make it?
Same dinner. In your memory.
Yeah. Hey, Ivan, how about speeding up a little?
The boss say go slow.
Thanks. Someday I'm going to have the pleasure of pulling out them whiskers hair by hair.
Good joke, huh? Kill you.
Where did you get this creep? At a House of David basketball game?
Boss hired him for the job this morning.
How far now, Moose?
Not a block. So far, nobody shot you.
Swell. I may even live till 6 o'clock.
What time is it now?
My watch says 6:01.
You're nuts. It's after 7. Okay, Ivan. Pull up. Everybody inside the firehouse for chow.
Two minutes later, I am upstairs at the Lincoln Pump and Hose Company, number 4. I get the place of honor at the head of a long banquet table where everybody can get a good shot at me. At my left is Moose with his ever-loving Luger aimed at my digestive system, and on my right is Ivan with his whiskers trailing in his chowder. Knishes are served, and the freeloaders fall to like a pack of starving wolves.
You crumb bums. Clamp down whilst I make the presentation to our pal Rocky. The boss, Harry Bowman, couldn't be here on account of urgent business, so I'm doing it in his honorable stead. All right, quiet, quiet. Rocky, old man, stand up here while I read this and no monkey business. Rocco Fortunato, in recognition of your untiring...
Untiring.
Like you said, untiring efforts in behalf of the 1953 political campaign, I present you with this gold-plated
miniature.
Like you said, ballot box. Yay! All right, shut up! Okay, everybody eat.
All right, come on.
Boy, what a spread. How come you ain't eating, Rocky boy?
How do I know the canisius ain't poison?
I'm eating them. Ivan's eating them.
How do you know they ain't poison?
Ah, go on.
Think about it. Maybe the grinder got to the delicatessen. Maybe he came up here before we got here and fixed the anchovies.
Huh?
What's wrong, Ivan?
These anchovies don't taste so good, Moot.
Hey, they don't. These canisius got a peculiar flavor, too.
That's probably your imagination. What's it taste like? Kind of bitter, maybe?
Yeah, bitter-like. What's wrong?
Yeah, it's probably nothing.
What is this bitter?
Nothing. Fatten up, eat up.
You told me I'm going to break your neck.
Well, is it kind of like somebody put too much pepper in it?
Yeah.
That's it.
What?
Therapeutic acid.
What?
Poison.
Holy smokes.
Your stomach feel kind of funny like?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. What do we do?
He's a jolly good fellow.
Fortune, you gotta save me.
He's a jolly good fellow.
Rocky, pal, what'd I take? Get me a doctor.
We'll give you a testimonial
Listen,
dinner.
Listen, you see this gun? I'll kill you if you don't tell me. Oh, my stomach. Oh, help, I'm poisoned.
Here, take it easy.
I gotta get out of here. Gotta get to a doctor, straight
away. Well, I guess I'll be going too.
Yeah, I don't think so, Mr. Fortune. Because I'll put a bullet in your belly to move.
Holy smokes, you ain't no Rusky.
And I ain't no moron either. I saw you dump that pepper shaker into the canisius a minute ago.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm an old man. If you watch real close, you'll see me dump the rest of it.
Right in your eye.
See you around, boy.
While Ivan is still sneezing, I duck out across the hall of the locker room where the firemen keep their clothes. I get in and slam the door behind me. As I turn around to look for a window...
Hold it, Jack.
I see one of the firemen, a guy about 8 feet tall with a handlebar mustache. Oh, man, can you help me? Listen, there's a killer named Carl the Grinder after me.
I heard of him.
He's wearing a phony beard like a Rusky. He'll be coming in here in a minute.
Wearing a phony beard, huh? You sure you're all right?
Look, I'm straight in the head, no kidding. I gotta get a place to hide.
I got a gun?
A howitzer.
Open up! Sure this guy is Carl the Grinder?
I'm sure.
Okay, get in that lock and close the door.
Here?
Hurry up.
Open up.
Okay.
Come
on, Fortune, I'll shoot this lock off.
Come on, keep quiet. I'm going to let him in.
Okay, Fortune, up.
Who are you?
I'm me. Who are you?
I'm looking for a guy, kind of thin, about medium height, dark hair.
Oh, yeah? Maybe he's hiding in your beard.
I'll take a look around.
Sure, help yourself.
Yeah, thanks.
Try this.
Peeking out through the grill work of the locker, I feel like a halibut doing 6 months in a sardine can. The big fireman waits till Ivan walks past him, and he picks up a fire axe and lets him have it from behind. Ivan falls on his beard, and I feel like I'm in Madame Tussauds for a couple of seconds.
To hit your friend.
You didn't hit him, John. You killed him.
No kidding. I must have used the pointed end of the axe.
Let's pull out that phony beard and get a look at him.
Yeah. I'd like to see what Carl the Grinder looks like myself.
One, two.
What's wrong, pal?
Hey, this ain't Carl the Grinder.
Who is it?
Harry Bowman.
The guy who used to be the assistant DA?
Yeah, he was using me for a clay pigeon. I guess he wanted to hang around and see what happens, so he put on a fake beard and a phony accent.
That's the guy that sent the grinder up the river, ain't it?
It's the guy. Now the grinder's only got one to go. Me.
You, huh?
Yeah, it's too bad you cheated him out of Bowman.
Oh, I didn't cheat him, pal. I just changed the batting order a little.
Yeah, I guess you put another... Hey.
Yeah, pal?
Who are you?
Well, let me take off the handlebars, pal. There you are.
The grinder.
Yeah, the grinder. I figured since he was going to be at the firehouse, I'd make like a fireman. I didn't think it was going to be this easy.
I didn't think it was going to be this hard.
Move back.
A pleasure.
I'm going to do this with my bare hands, Fortune, the way I did Midge Moore.
You're going to have to catch me then.
Shall we dance? You're trapped, Rocky, like a rat in a corner.
You would like to sit this one out, would you?
Uh-uh.
I guess there's nothing much left to do but throw my Sunday punch. Must be Monday. Nothing happened.
If that's your best punch, Rocky, you might as well quit now. Okay, Rocky. We'll dance now.
My throat.
Nice and slow.
Carl! Hold it, Grinder.
You ain't getting me, Carter.
You okay, Rocky?
Fine.
Oh, Carl, is he?
I'm afraid he is.
You're better off, Mary.
Yeah, I suppose I am. I went to the police like you told me, Rocky.
Had a hard time catching up with you.
Swell. I thought I was the easiest man in Manhattan Borough to locate. Come on, Mary, let's get out of here.
Hey, Fortune, you must have dropped this.
Huh? Oh, yeah, my gold-plated ballot box. Thanks very much.
I better phone in about this. What time you got?
6 o'clock. No, no, that can't be right. It was 6 about an hour ago.
Maybe you forgot to wind it.
Yeah. It's ticking all right.
It's kind of loud for a wristwatch, ain't it?
Yeah, even for a cheap wristwatch. Hey.
Huh?
Get away from the window, Sarge.
What?
Move!
Hey, why'd you throw that ballot box out there? You'll...
What was that?
Looks like somebody stuffed the ballot box. I guess the grinder was trying to make sure Bowman's party lost the election.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast include Jack Nestle, Barney Phillips, Kay Stewart, Jack Mather, Tony Barrett, and George Pembroke. Tonight's script was written by George Lefferts. Andrew C. Love directed. To tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
You know, Park Avenue's a mighty fancy place. I've been finding this out since making like a process server for the 14-carat legal eagle Perry Shane. But next week, I'll tell you how I got a little surprise. I found out the street can be mink-lined, but there's still plenty of skunk at the intersections. See you around.
Enjoy Fibber, McGee, and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you liked today's episodes. You can find more from Screen Guild Theater, Rocky Fortune, past episodes of this show, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes all at the website. Find our Shoutcast stream there as well, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, click on that link to donate or visit donate.relicradio.com. Thank you, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.